When the Hinshaw family moves into Summerwind, the house speaks to them in whispers. In time, whispers become screams, and buried secrets lead to possession.
What's up? Here we are again, whether you like it or not.
We're back. We got a good episode today.
We do have a very good episode today.
Today's episode is A Haunting of Summerwind. Or is it The Haunting of Summerwind?
It's The Haunting of Summerwind. Well, whatever. Close enough.
One of our favorite episodes out of The Haunting series.
Yeah.
First two seasons were the best out of that one, I think. And this was a cream of the crop.
Yeah.
So we're going to discuss this case today. And,
the reason we got this idea was because one of our regular YouTube listeners,
John R. Yeah.
Said that we should do a show on how we felt about like various paranormal shows and, you know, like Paranormal Witness and A Haunting and stuff like that. And I said, you know, that's kind of a cool idea. And you know what we should do is that we should pick, like, because we really like A Haunting. And
we
have
like five seasons of that on
and
CD.
I have five seasons of it on DVD. Yeah. Like, I bought it for him for Christmas and birthdays over various years. And so we really like that show a lot. And we thought, well, maybe this might be like a once a month kind of deal where like we'll pick one of our favorite episodes.
And we'll review it.
And we'll review it. And then we'll talk about the actual case behind the show. And
yeah, do like a case analysis of it.
Yeah, stuff like that.
So thanks, John. Thanks, John. That was a good idea.
That was a good idea. Yeah. We might actually make this a regular feature.
Yeah. Yeah. And John's another Army guy like me, and he's serving Korea like I did. I think about a year or two apart.
Yeah.
In terms of, so he's a cool guy. He's been with us through the beginning.
Yeah, he's listened to every single one of our shows, so thank you, man.
Yeah, so we're gonna do reviews on a regular basis, so we might as well start off with A Haunting series because everybody knows it.
Yeah,
and we'll riff on it if it isn't good, or we'll say it's good if it is good. You know, we'll give you what we think. You know, we're not gonna hold back.
Yeah, true.
So that'd be cool. We gotta do house cleaning first, though.
Yes.
Podcast.
Yes.
Podcast going through the roof.
Thanks to the Project Entertainment Network and the hard work of Armand Rosamilia.
Yes.
Who has been advertising our show and, you know, kind of supporting our show. Us and all the other podcasts that are on the Project Entertainment Network. Our numbers tripled already for this month.
Quadrupled in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Because it went from about 1,000 downloads to about 4,000, 1,000 downloads a month. To, what was it, 4,000
downloads?
No, see,
last month we had, now this is just the audio show, this isn't the YouTube show, but last month, audio downloads, we had about 3,300 downloads. This month already, and I've only put up, what, like one or two shows this month?
Yeah.
This month we already have almost 6,700.
6,700. We think a lot of it had to do with the Ed and Lorraine Warren video that we did.
A lot of people really did seem to like that. I didn't realize how many... How many fans they have.
Right. So we have some new listeners on board, and you know, probably a good time to give you guys some background if you're coming in this late. Although it seems through our data, it seems like you're going through the old episodes now and listening to
it. Yeah, it does seem like a lot of the old episodes are getting downloaded too. So people must be discovering the show and then going back and downloading all our old stuff.
Jenny and I are not professional podcasters. We don't really do this for a living.
Obviously.
All right. we basically do this for fun, and we do it for the scene. Jenny is a paranormal nonfiction author, and she's got at least four. I think you have four paranormal nonfictions out now, don't you?
Yeah, and then some horror fiction.
And some horror fiction. Her new one is The Unseen Hand. She's been which is about poltergeists. It's like over 100 some odd cases of poltergeists, going all the way back to I think the
first century
AD.
Flavius Josephus, bitches.
And she's a regular guest on other paranormal shows. You just did, what was that show you did a couple weeks ago?
Jim Harold. I did Jim Harold. I did End of Days.
Where'd the Road Go?
Well, I haven't done that one yet. I'm scheduled
to
do that
one. You've been on that one before, though.
I've been on that one before.
Yeah.
And Real Paranormal Activity. I was on that with Aaron Hunter. I was on that one, too.
Right. And we never really intended to make a big podcast or a big show. This just kind of snowballed as it went. So mentally, I'm still doing this for... Like guys like John R., there's like four or five people out. To me, it's like I'm giving a show to only four or five people.
But everybody, that's cool, though, because it's like, I'm always so, because I mean, me and you, we just kind of, even when we're not being recorded, we just kind of sit around and bullshit all the time about stuff and make jokes and everything. Yeah. And like the fact that so many people like wanted to listen to us do that.
It's
like,
kind of fun.
On tape, as it were.
Yeah.
That's very funny to me.
Well, you know, people like it.
I guess so.
People like it. Well, you know, we give them a little bit of the inside and we're not bullshitting them. You know, if we think a case is bad.
And we talk about shit that we think is interesting. Like, we don't really, I mean, we just, I know like our podcast episodes, if you look at the topics, they're kind of all over the place and don't really make any sense. But that's just because, you know, we just like, what are we going to do this week? And it's like, maybe let's do blah. And then we'll just think of something at random, or someone will remind us of something and we'll do a show about it. You know, whether it's horror movies or true crime or paranormal stuff or whatever. So we don't really have any agenda. We're just kind of like, whatever we feel is interesting.
So welcome to the show, guys. Mostly talking to the podcast people. I think we have about 450 subs on YouTube, and our YouTube show is visually really cool. And then, it seems to be, based on the numbers right now on the podcast, we probably have about 4,000 regulars, I think, on there.
Yeah.
What do you say about?
Probably.
Based
about
on
that.
The downloads, probably about 4,000 of them, give or take. So, welcome to the show. Let's start with A Haunting of Summerwind. And let's just talk about A Haunting, the series A Haunting.
Yeah.
What do you think of it?
Now, how many seasons has it been on? Because I kind of lost track of it after about season 6 or 7.
Yeah.
It's still on though, right? They're still making new ones.
I think
ones.
It's still on. By the time the third and fourth season started to come out, I started to like not watch it as much because I didn't like how they portrayed things. They started to copy like horror movies a little too much.
Yeah.
Fake scares. What do you call it?
Yeah.
Jump scares. And
well, here's
a lot
of
CG.
Now here's
and
something.
They were taking liberties with the testimony.
Oh yeah. Big time.
Yeah.
Well, here's something that bothered me, and they didn't do this as much because I bought I bought you the box
one, two,
set
3, 4, and 5
of so we have the first 5 seasons.
Yeah.
And I've seen some of the other ones like on Destination America and whatnot. Now it seems to me that after the first season or two, the first season or two I really liked them because even if I thought the story was bullshit, like they were still creepy.
Yeah, they were fun to watch.
And they were fun to watch. They were entertaining.
The writing was good. The set was good. The sets were good.
I liked that they were restrained.
They were restrained, right, yeah.
They didn't go over the top. There wasn't kind of a...
They tended to stick with the witness testimony.
Yeah,
whatever
they
the
didn't
witness,
embellish it
They didn't
much.
Embellish. If the witness said they saw something, that's what they'd show.
Yeah.
Later on, they were showing stuff that the witnesses never mentioned, which I didn't really like.
Yeah, because the witnesses
there's always
are,
something in the background.
Oh, I felt like someone was watching me. And then in the reenactment, there's like a demon like standing by. I'm like, they didn't say that they saw that.
Right.
So just quit doing that.
Yeah, it was a little deceptive.
It was a little bit deceptive.
But the one that really, from day one, that really stood out, there was a lot. There's actually 4 or 5 in the stand up. You know, man. We know.
Yeah, Demon Child
was a good
we're definitely
one.
Gonna have to
we're
do one on that one because it's like, well, man said it was okay.
Yeah,
man said it would be fine.
Are you peeing in the closet?
Man said I could.
Yeah, it was awesome.
We and still use that man said
yeah,
I could.
Yeah, yeah, man said it. Man.
The and demon's name was Man. You
yeah, know. I'm sure they all know. Then there was the one about Mr. Gordy.
That was like, the first season one, like episode one, I think.
Yeah, and Hungry Ghosts, ones where the...
when they were in Taiwan,
when they
right?
were in Taiwan, and it's implied that the ghosts were raping the girls.
Yeah, they didn't really come out and say it,
they
but I kind of got that impression.
Right. So but, we're going to talk about all these.
Yeah, we might have to do that one.
I think the king of them all was the one that really kind of got me, the one that got me interested in that series, was A Haunting of Summerwind. The Haunting of Summerwind.
And that was season 1, episode 2.
Right.
And we seriously, every time we pull those DVDs out, he always wants to rewatch that one. We've probably seen it like 20 times.
Sure. Well, I'm fascinated with raccoons.
Where is that raccoon?
Where's that raccoon?
I want that raccoon found. Where's that raccoon?
Where is that raccoon?
And that actor is used over and over again. The first
yeah, he was
two
in a
seasons.
Bunch of the other ones.
Every time
too.
I see him, I'm asking, "Hey, man, where's the raccoon?" You know, something. Anyway,
I'm totally using that soundbite like from now on. Every time
that's going to be a running gag.
That's going to
yeah. Where's that raccoon?
Where's that raccoon? Because I did find that soundbite.
Where is that raccoon?
Okay, let's get to how the story as how it was portrayed in the episode. And then show us the differences. Show us what you dug up about this case.
Okay. All right. Well, on the show, It took place in Wisconsin.
All right.
In 1969.
All right.
And evidently, there's this woman named Ginger Henshaw.
Uh-huh.
And she was married to a guy named Arnold.
Mm-hmm.
On the show, they had four kids.
Okay.
They actually had six, but all right. Whatever.
All right.
So.
They didn't want to hire two more kids.
I guess not. They're like, we've
four's already, good enough.
Yeah, that's fine. There's just a bunch of kids. A gaggle. So, evidently, they were driving around and they saw this kind of dumpy looking house, although it looked okay in the episode.
Yeah, in the episode, it looked like a nice house with some planks and debris thrown out in front of it.
Yeah.
You'd look at that and go, oh, I can fix that in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Where's the dumpster?
Yeah. Just got to clean this shit up.
But that's not the way that house really looked.
No.
We're showing pictures of it probably right now on the YouTube show.
Yeah. But so, okay, so evidently, so Ginger Henshaw, who was interviewed on the show, which, you know, much older, obviously. And she said she fell in love with the house and she figured, oh, we can fix it up and all this other kind of stuff. So they buy the house. Now, I don't know, like, it didn't seem like it took that long before the paranormal shit started happening. Now, the first thing she said started to happen was she started to get this compulsion to put the house back the way it was.
Yeah. She felt like she was possessed by this urge to totally restore the house and to even like get the exact matching paint
color and all this other stuff. Yeah. Now, they claim that they tried to contact like various contractors and repair guys and stuff like that, and that no one would work on the house when they discovered where it was, like which house it was.
Right.
Now, it should be noted that the house, I mean, they call it Summerwind, and that's usually how it's portrayed. Although locally in Wisconsin, the house is actually known as the Lamont Mansion because that was the name of the main family that lived there back in the day.
Yeah.
But, you know, Summerwind, that's what they call it. I guess some people call it that. But
now, what I remember when I first heard of this case, when I was watching the episode for the first time, I thought, boy, that's strange. They don't want to come and work on the house. But then I go back and now that I have access, you know, and I could see what house it is they're
what
talking
it looked
about,
like actually
it
instead
starts
of it.
To make a little bit more sense. The house was in pretty bad shape.
Yeah.
The best way to get that house looking good would be to tear that house down.
And start all over again. <All right. laughs> Like I said, had it looked the way it looked in the episode,
right.
Then it didn't seem like it was that big a deal.
Right. But when you saw it,
when you see photographs of it, you'll know why probably nobody wanted
to. Granted, the photographs that we're looking at probably come from about 87, maybe 84.
Yeah.
And this was happening. The story is being told from the point of view of like 1969.
I think that's when Ginger Henshaw and her husband bought the house in 1969.
As far as houses go, that's not a big... That's not a whole lot of time.
Right.
When I was living in Boston, I lived in houses that were built in the mid-1800s.
Yeah.
Some of them are still out there, you know? Right. Which, that's a story. That was a weird house. I'm not going to talk about that right now, but... I'm not going to say it was haunted. It was a creepy old house.
Yeah.
But it looked a lot better than this one that we're talking about. Lamont Mansion. Not only was it dilapidated, architecturally, it sucked. It was kind of ugly. You couldn't really tell it. The guy who tells the story, which guy is it? He said that it looked like it didn't really have any.
Yeah. Raymond Bober.
Raymond.
Ginger Henshaw's father.
Right. He's saying it was hard to kind of place the architectural style.
Yeah.
I'd place it place the architectural style at bad. that's what I put it at.
Bad and tacky. The house was built. From as far as I could determine, in 1916 or 1917.
Yeah.
Okay, so you have to think by 1969, it was pretty old, and it had been abandoned for a while.
Yeah.
I wasn't able to... I think on the show, they said it had been abandoned for 40 years.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. But some of the newspaper articles I found said it had been abandoned for some time. So... Right.
And
it wasn't in great shape when they came across it anyway.
It looked like a cross between a colonial home... A Bavarian barn and something out of the old West. To me, that's what it looked like.
Yeah.
It looked pretty bad. It looked tacky.
Yeah. Okay, so now on the show, it's weird because the story that the family tells to the newspaper and that was in like a like various books and stuff like that was actually worse than what they showed on the show.
Right.
On the show, the family moves in. She gets this compulsion to start fixing it up. Now, her husband, Arnold, starts acting strangely. Like, he loses interest in working on the house. Like I said, they couldn't get anyone else to help them work on it. Like, workmen would come and just bring stuff up to the driveway and then said, nope, I'm not coming any closer. See yous. You know what right. I mean? So they had to do a lot of the work themselves. Arnold loses interest in the house.
Right. Stops going to work.
Stops going to work at some point right. and starts acting very strangely, like he's just staring out of windows. And then he starts getting real aggressive.
And violent.
And violent.
Right.
Yelling at his children, like just getting all upset at the slightest provocation.
He also thought that people were opening and closing or opening the windows.
Yeah.
Remember, he said, who opened that window?
Yeah, the windows would open and close right. on their own.
Right, and he'd set down tools and turn around and they'd be gone.
And they'd be gone, yeah.
So he would blame the kids for taking the tools. The kids lost the raccoon.
Yeah.
Or the raccoon went outside. When the raccoon came back, he killed it as punishment.
Yeah.
Which is, you know,
the one of the daughters said that.
Yeah. And the actor that played the role of this guy in the yeah. episode is awesome.
Yeah.
It's a really... creepy episode, especially the first half of the episode. He sits there and he plays on the organ, creepy music, and remember all that? I don't care. I'll play all night if I have to.
Yeah.
Remember that?
That was another thing.
The kids have to go to sleep. I don't care. Because possessed by the house.
Yeah. Now, apparently, I think in the Hammond organ that he played in the episode, they had had that for a while. They brought it to the house. I don't think they mentioned that on the episode. But, yeah, Ginger said that he would start playing this organ just like day and night, and that was all he wanted to do.
Yeah.
Almost like the demons in his head were telling yeah. him that he had to keep playing it. And in the episode, it was kind of creepy. It was kind of like Carnival of Souls, if any
yeah.
of you guys have seen that, where she was like an organ player. And like her, the organ playing was getting all creepy and,
yeah.
you know, all distorted.
Yeah, sounding. They portrayed it pretty cool. He was definitely going insane, and you kind of go insane watching this part of the episode. You're like, whoa.
Yeah.
It made an impression on me.
Yeah. Where's that raccoon?
Yeah.
Where is that raccoon?
But anyway, you guys, you don't even know how often we say that. So it seems like, so he starts flipping out. I think Ginger was also kind of hearing voices.
Yeah.
And she saw a couple of apparitions, not like full-bodied kind of apparitions, but I think she saw like kind of ghostly looking
yeah,
figures.
Yeah, and she had some guests over. And when she was in the kitchen, she heard a scream and ran out to the guest room where they were. And she saw them getting up and running.
Yeah,
running out
right.
of the house. And in the corner, she saw evidently...
Like a face or something like that.
Yeah, a mist with a face in it.
And evidently those friends would right. never spoke to her again,
yeah,
I
she
guess.
Never saw them again.
So,
I think
yeah.
Also, I think before that, it ran through her. She was in a hallway, remember? And it was... She
yeah,
felt
that's
like
right.
there was something behind her, and it ran right through her.
Yeah.
Saw a face. Anyway, it was pretty creepy.
And I think the kids, like... Now, like I said, I think in real life, they were six kids, but I think only one of the daughters was on the actual show getting interviewed.
Yeah, and they're compelling. The witnesses are very compelling.
Yeah.
I really believed what they were saying, especially the first batch.
Yeah.
Because actually, this whole Haunting of Summerwind episode is two stories told back to back. The first story and the second story.
Yeah.
They're the same family, but the first one is the daughter, her husband, and the kids, and then later the daughter's father
yeah.
and her brother. And the extended family once they moved into it. Because they left. She left. But anyway, you can get to that.
Yeah. So, yeah, one of the daughters was on there, and she was talking about, you know, how her dad... On the show, I think it was her stepdad, but I don't... Everything I've read about the real case, I thought that was her real dad.
Yeah.
It seemed like.
Seemed like it was.
Yeah.
That's how it was portrayed. That's how I believed it.
Yeah. Like, on the show, I think they implied that it was her stepdad, but it wasn't. It was her real dad. So he wigged out. And she was talking about, the daughter was talking about, I don't think the daughter like ever, I don't remember her ever saying on the show that she had seen anything, but she just said that he was behaving strange, like he was possessed, that the house seemed evil, that there was like, it was
and
very
that evil
oppressive.
Was, that evil was in him, that he became evil. He killed the raccoon and was abusive towards him. The
yeah.
stepdad, yeah.
Yeah.
So
what ended up happening then was after all this stuff happened, Ginger took the kids and called her dad and said, come get me. I can't take this anymore. Because, it was 1969. She wasn't working. She was she was taking care of the kids.
Yeah, but you left out a cool part of it, though.
What happened?
It got so bad that they were, because he wouldn't go to work.
That's what I was just going to say.
That the power went out. They ended up in the living room burning the furniture in the fireplace.
Because it was so cold, warm. Yeah.
Yeah. And she couldn't stand it in the house. Earlier, she was actually sleeping outside, and she had a knife on her at all times because she thought her insane boyfriend, her husband, was going to kill her. They were married.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were married. Yeah, but he was getting violent. She thought that he was dangerous.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, eventually, I thought that kind of stuck with me, that they were actually burning the furniture.
Yeah. Because he wouldn't go to work anymore.
No, refused to go to work. Weird. Yeah.
So all their bills got unpaid. And all
when
this other
she
stuff.
Left with the kids, she left with the kids. They left him in that place by himself.
Yeah.
According to the episode.
Although the episode said that he left the next day.
Right.
Now, that's not quite what happened, but I'll get into that in a minute.
Okay.
So on the show, she takes off. She takes the kids. She calls her dad, says, come get me. I can't take this anymore. Her dad comes in the camper and picks her up. She moves away. The husband, Arnold, they get a divorce, and they never hear from him again, evidently. A little while later, it wasn't clear how long a span this was from the show, but a little while later, she had told her father about this house, and she told him everything that happened there.
The haunting.
All about the haunting and everything.
And he didn't believe it.
And he did not believe her.
No.
And he was very skeptical and stuff like that. Now, he went to look at the house, and meanwhile, someone else had bought it, or it had reverted to someone else's.
Right, although that's not...
One was living in it, but...
Right. That's not mentioned in the episode, but that's evidently what really happened. Somebody else had bought it, right?
Yeah, that older woman had bought it.
Right.
And, yeah.
Okay,
so,
yeah, so
she wasn't living in it.
Right.
But she had just bought it for, I don't know why. Okay. But,
And she wouldn't go in there.
And she wouldn't go in there. Yeah. She just bought it for the hell of it, I guess. But she wouldn't go in there. So the father goes to look at the house, and for some reason feels compelled. He's like, I'm going to buy this house, and I'm going to fix it up, and I'm going to turn it into like a bed and breakfast or something like that.
And his son had just come back from Vietnam.
Yeah.
And he was going to work on it also.
Yeah, they were both going to work on it because they were both in the construction business.
The story was is that they thought they could do something with it. They thought they would buy it, fix it up, possibly flip it. I guess that's what... they didn't say they were going to flip it, but that's what I figured that they were going to do. And this was going to be a project.
Yeah.
Project house.
Yeah. So, evidently it had been a little while since she left, because when they went in there to work on it, they said it was more degraded. And she had done some work on it. I think they lived there for 6 months.
Yeah.
So, okay. So what ended up happening was, one day, the son was there working on the house by himself.
Right.
And he evidently saw something so scary that he took off out of the house.
And didn't tell anybody what it
was. And he wouldn't tell anybody what it was until later.
And in the episode, they don't show you what it was.
Not until later.
Not until later.
Yeah. Now, you only find out what it was later on when... Okay, so the father tells Ginger, hey, I bought that house. And she was like, why the fuck did you do that?
House,
what, don't you remember everything I told you and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, oh, it'll be fine. It's not really haunted. You're just crazy or whatever, because bitches be crazy.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Okay. So then she notices that the son, or her brother, rather, I think his name's Carl. And he was like freaking out and he was really scared and everything. Now, since she had left the house, she had been super interested in the paranormal and she was studying hypnosis and everything. Because, 70s and everybody was into that. So she says she's going to hypnotize him, right? So she hypnotizes him, and he starts talking in a different voice.
Yeah.
Like, sounding like...
Yeah, and he's like, all my children are weak, and I am strong, and all
yeah.
this.
Yeah. Like, so I guess the implication being that the evil spirit that was in the house, blah, blah, blah.
Right. But they really don't get anything out of that.
Yeah. They recorded it.
Right.
But, I haven't heard the recordings, real recordings, so I don't know.
So the dad said, well, hypnotize me, and they got into automatic writing.
Yeah.
And that's when this Carver subject gets in.
Yeah.
Comes into the show.
Yeah.
And Carver was some kind of an explorer.
Yeah, and he was a real guy.
Bought a bunch of land, and they think there was some kind of a land deed. With the Native Americans that were there at the time, and it starts to get a little bit convoluted. They did find, evidently, the original blueprints to the house wrapped up around a peace pipe.
Yeah.
So they went on a quest to try to find the land deed.
Yeah. And now, the father, yeah. Raymond Bober, he said that he had had a dream in which he was in the house, or it was either when he was under hypnosis or he had a dream or something like that. But he said he had a dream where he was in the house and he went down to the cellar and there was like a little rock, like part of the baseboard. Yeah. And he pried it off and there was a space behind it.
Yeah, like a secret hiding space.
And there was a little black box in right. there with a land deed in it. And he said right. the name Jonathan Carver was on it.
Right. They think that it's being haunted by Jonathan Carver and that he's missing his land deed. And if they somehow can get the land deed settled, that the haunting will end. That's yeah. what they're thinking.
Right.
So he has this vision in a trance. Then they end up going to the house and trying to find the deed right where they saw it, but it wasn't there. They turned the house upside down. They could not find this deed.
Now, they claim that there was a space behind this particular...
But it was empty.
Like a secret hiding yes. hole. But yeah, but there was nothing in it. What ended up happening after that? Okay, so then the brother, Carl, he tells them, okay, well, what I saw in the house, I was in the house and he heard someone... Or no, he heard gunshots.
Yeah.
Really close by.
Yeah, well, okay. This is how that went down. Once he was listening to that tape.
Yeah.
And all this little automatic writing and all this little psychic experimentation that they were doing, he goes back and tells them why he ran out of the house a few weeks or a few months prior.
Yeah.
He said that he heard gunshots, two of them, up close. And then when he looked into a room, there was nobody there.
Yeah.
And that they couldn't have escaped. You know, I think he was on the second floor and ran out of there. He felt like somebody was watching him. That's how I remember that yeah. going. And then later on in the house, they find two bullet holes out of evidently a .45.
Well, okay.
The woman who owned the house heard a story that the original owners at one time saw a ghost and fired off two rounds at it.
And that, yeah. yeah. Now, on the TV show...
Yeah.
It says that the people that lived in it in the 1930s.
Right.
And on the show, they called them the Pattersons, but it was actually the Lamont family in okay. real life. Okay. I don't know why they changed the name.
They're always doing that. You'll find out yeah. they always do that in these series.
Yeah, but they changed the name. It was right. actually the Lamont family that this legend grew up about, although I don't know if it's true or not.
Right.
Evidently, Lamont and his wife were sitting in their kitchen one night in 1935 or thereabouts, and the door from the kitchen into the basement opened by itself,
right.
and they saw an apparition.
Yeah.
Lamont grabbed a pistol and fired two shots yeah. at the ghost, because I guess he thought he was going to kill the ghost yeah. with a gun. I don't know how he thought that was possible.
In the episode, it was kind of a cool scene.
It was a cool effect,
it looks kind of like a man-sized cloud with a human face in it. And then the guy, what was his name? What was his real name again? Patterson?
That's what they called him in the show.
That's what they called him in the show.
His real name's Lamont.
Lamont.
Yeah.
He reaches into a drawer and pulls out a Colt 1911 and fires off two rounds into it.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
And they claim, like, when they went back to the house to look for the deed, they claim that there are still two bullet holes right. in the door. Now, there yeah. are photographs
yeah.
That were taken in the 80s
yeah.
by people who went to the house later after it was abandoned. And evidently there are pictures of the door that does have two holes in it, whether they're bullet holes or not. I don't know. I'm not a ballistics expert.
Yeah.
But like I said, I'm not sure if that story is true. That's what the yeah. lady that owned the house said.
Right.
She said there was a legend about Lamont that he shot at a ghost and there were two. Okay. So that's what they were hearing was these two gunshots.
Right? Okay. We're almost at the halfway point. How does the series end? How does it wrap up? And then we'll go back to our analysis.
Pretty much it wraps up with, I think after they went and looked for the deed and they couldn't find it and they tore the house up and stuff like that, the episode ended with them going be like, well, we've wasted too much time on this. Fuck it.
Basically.
And that was kind of the end.
And then the house gets struck by lightning and because of evil forces and it burns down.
Yeah. Which right. did, I mean, evil forces, I don't know. But the house didn't burn down in 1988. Right.
But in the episode, they through sound effects and movie magic, it was destroyed by evil forces.
Yeah. I think in the show, they said it was struck by lightning multiple times. And I don't think that's the case. I think right. it was only struck yeah. once. It caught fire. I mean, the house right. was made of wood, mostly.
Yeah.
So it burned to the ground in 1988. So it's not there anymore. There's still a ruin. Like, I think the chimneys are still there.
Yeah.
But the house itself is not there. It burned down in right. 1988.
If you haven't seen the episode, go watch it right now, and then in the second half, you'll see our analysis.
Yeah, we'll talk about the episode. We'll talk about what really happened. We'll talk about all this other stuff. So we're going to take a break right now, and we will be back in just a minute.
Armcast, Dead Sexy Podcasts. I'm your host, Armand Rosamilia. Fridays exclusively on Project Entertainment Network, where I interview authors, publishers, editors, artists, filmmakers, narrators, the lady from Walmart, whoever I feel like talking to. That's every Friday, Armcast, right here on Project Entertainment Network.
Subculture Corsets and Clothing is our favorite store for unusual clothing, shoes, and accessories. They offer a wide selection of men's and women's clothing at great prices. Subculture also offers a cool selection of shoes and accessories. Steampunk, gothic apparel, retro, corsets, and so much more at Subculture Corsets and Clothing. Check out Subculture online at subculturecorsets.com. That's subculturecorsets.com. Make sure you use the discount code 13o'clock for a 10% discount. Subculturecorsets.com or visit their store in Jacksonville, Florida, just off I-95.
Every person's story has something to teach us. How others view life, how obstacles are overcome, how joy is felt, how fears are faced, how love is expressed. The Matters of Faith podcast explores individual stories of people's lives and how faith plays a part. It may not be your story, but it may help shape yours.
The Matters of Faith podcast with Jay Wilburn is on Project Entertainment Network.
The Unseen Hand, a new exploration of poltergeist phenomena by Jenny Ashford, author of The Rochdale Poltergeist, House of Fire and Whispers, and The Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist. The Unseen Hand is a comprehensive collection of over 100 reported poltergeist cases from the first century to the present day. All the best known cases are presented, from the Bell Witch to Jeff the Talking Mongoose, from Rosenheim to Tina Resch, from Enfield to the Entity. A large selection of fascinating and lesser-known accounts from all over the world are also included, and all contain testimony from the most eerie and extraordinary events. The Unseen Hand is the ultimate compendium for readers interested in poltergeist disturbances throughout history and the theories behind what causes them. On sale now from Amazon in print, ebook, and audiobook formats. Go to Unseen Hand Book on Facebook and visit www.jennyashford.com for more information.
All right, Haunting of Summerwind.
Yeah, it's a good one.
It is a very good episode.
Love that episode.
It is good. Now, the nice thing about, and like I said, I mentioned this before, but the nice thing about the early Haunting episodes, they were very restrained.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't show, there was like, yeah, there was ghosts on this and stuff, but there was no demons, there was no nothing like that.
Well, there was some demons, I guess, sometimes.
Right, but it wasn't like they weren't
wasn't
having,
over the top.
They weren't having guys in Halloween masks, like, right. popping out of people's closets and shit like that.
I don't know, they kind of drew me in for some reason. I don't know if it was the music or what, just the way.
They are very, and that guy's voice is very comforting.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, because sometimes we'll just kind of put them on one after the other and just kind of lay there and watch.
Yeah.
Just because that guy's
in America,
voice is so,
there is true evil.
Because that guy's voice is so soothing. Yeah. I don't know who that guy is. He does like a lot of
voiceovers for
that kind of stuff, but he has a great voice.
Yeah.
But so, okay.
So that was the episode version.
Right.
What were you able to dig up about this case?
Okay. Now.
Because it is not all as it seems, is it?
No.
Okay.
Well, it never is.
It never is.
These, I mean, the shows, they're trying to make a good show, and like, you know, I have to say, Haunting of Summerwind, you know, the show is pretty accurate, mostly, to what these people claimed happened. But it should be noted that most of the information and most of the story that came out about this house later came from a book that Ginger Henshaw's father, Raymond Bober, wrote about the house. It was called The Carver Effect, I believe.
Yeah.
And so that was where most of this information came from.
Right.
So it's pretty much, I mean, Ginger was on the program. Her dad was on the program. Her brother was on the program. And one of her daughters was on the program. So they, you know, these were the witnesses that were on the show. And they had a similar kind of story that this is what happened. Okay. The thing about Summerwind, like I said, In Wisconsin, it's generally called the Lamont Mansion because that was the name of the of a prominent family that lived there. The house was built in the early, you know, like 1916, 1917. It was built as a summer house, or I think it was originally built as a fishing lodge, but then it was expanded to like a summer house by the Lamont family, who were kind of prominent, like up in the government. I think he was in like, I don't even remember now, but he was in someone's, he was somebody's Secretary of State or Secretary of Commerce or something like that.
Well, tell us what was left out.
Okay. Now, the funny thing is that some of the stuff that was left out was actually kind of
pretty good.
Interesting. So I don't know why they left it out. Okay. Now, you know how Arnold like was possessed, quote unquote, and like flipped out and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Now, in the episode, they just kind of showed Ginger and the kids leaving and him staying in the house. And then it just said, oh, he left the next day. And that's all they said.
Mm-hmm.
Now, evidently, in real life, he had a full on nervous breakdown. And they said he went for treatment. So I guess they put him in a psychiatric hospital for a while.
All right.
But they got divorced later. Now, Ginger attempted suicide. Or so it claims in all these other things. They did not mention that on the show. And she did not mention it. She was on the show.
Right.
Talking. Another thing that they didn't, they left out some of the haunting stuff. They left out that they claimed that a lot of their appliances and stuff like that, when they moved them in a house, it's like they would get new appliances and then they would work and then they wouldn't work.
Right.
And then they would call a repair guy and then they would start working again.
Okay.
So like they were having all kinds of like electrical difficulties.
Well, tell them about the big one though. The big thing that was left out.
Okay. Now the big thing, and I don't know why they left this out because this is great.
I kind of suspect why they left it out.
Well, Go ahead. But this is great. I don't know why they didn't put it in there. So, okay. So while they're renovating the house, Ginger and Arnold, this is before Arnold started flipping out. So they are in this closet, right? And they start painting it in there. Now, against the back wall of the closet, there's like a big drawer, like a shoe drawer. And they pull it out because they don't want the paint to get on it and get stuck closed and everything like that. Now, when they pull it out, they notice that there's this big dark gap behind there.
Right.
So Arnold gets a flashlight and he sticks his head in there and sticks a flashlight. And he says that he sees a skeleton. Okay. Now, he says he's not entirely sure because there's so much plumbing and all this other kind of stuff back there. So when the kids come home from school,
mm-hmm.
I guess they're small enough to kind of get in there and see better. Mm-hmm. So they give the kids the flashlight and they crawl in there and look. It's not clear because the kid says, the daughter Mary said that she saw black hair and part of a brown arm. And so, like, I'm like, were they bones or was it like a corpse?
And is this a human body?
Yeah.
All right. Now, what is the source? Where's the story appear?
Well, this story, this is from, this actually what I'm reading from.
Mm-hmm.
This is from the Milwaukee Journal from 1985.
Okay.
But this story came from a book called Haunted Heartland by Beth Scott and Michael Normand. And I'm assuming that this came from the family's
testimony. We're not positive.
And
but this is the
one. And
the
also from Raymond Bober's book.
Okay.
The Carver Effect. This was Ginger Henshaw's dad who supposedly bought the house.
Right. There. Now we're not positive if the corpse story came from his book, are we?
I think most of this did, because most I think that did. Was the main source.
Yeah, we don't have that book, stuff. So we can't check. We're just
But the main source for all the haunting stuff, generally it comes from his book, which I think was written in 1980 or
thereabouts. Now, see, here's the strange thing. They're claiming that they saw a body inside the walls of this house.
That they found a corpse behind the walls.
But they didn't go to the cops.
Yeah.
They said they didn't go to the cops because it would have been too old.
Yeah, it's like, oh, everyone's dead that's involved with it, so why bother?
Yeah, I'm not buying it.
I'm like,
there's no statutes of limitations.
Yeah, murder
on
doesn't
murder
have statute of limitations.
Like, and another thing is what kind of people could sleep in a house knowing that there's a dead body stashed in between the walls? I ain't buying it.
Yeah, see, I don't.
That's why I think that does not appear in the episode.
Maybe not. Maybe they thought that was bullshitty.
Yeah, because then when they went back later to try to prove the veracity of this body, it's not there.
Yeah. That was it. Yeah.
Yeah. See, when did that happen now?
Another thing. Okay. Right. Now, where the thing about Ginger and them leaving, like I said, she attempted suicide. He was sent to like a psychiatric hospital, evidently. They got divorced. Now, the dad either bought or attempted to buy Summerwind later on. But there was a pretty big gap because Ginger had already remarried.
Right.
By the time that her dad decided to buy the property.
Right.
I don't know. And there, that's another thing, is there is it isn't real certain whether he actually bought the property or whether he was trying to buy the property.
Yeah, that's another issue. Some people say that he never bought that property.
Yeah, some people say that the records show that he only attempted to buy it or no that his name that was never on the deed.
No records.
I'm just saying that's what it says.
That's the claim.
Yeah.
Some people say that he actually never bought it. We can't verify this. We don't have the original books involved. And, of course, to really know for sure, you'd have to go to the town hall down there.
Yeah.
And start pulling records out. Because third parties jump on stories like these and tend to add to them.
Yeah.
Like, we're not totally positive that the corpse angle on this story actually came from the family. That may have come from a third party. That might be an aftermarket upgrade.
We don't know. As they say.
We don't know.
Yeah. And that's another thing, is that after her dad supposedly bought the house, like, her dad, her new husband, and her brother were at the house, and she told them about the body. Because before, when they had found the body, like, a long time ago, when she was still married to the crazy guy, she said, oh, we're not going to tell anybody about this.
All right.
But later on, like, I guess it was probably at least a year later, I would imagine. Later on, like, when her dad bought the house, she told him about the body. So they went to look for it in the same place, and it wasn't there.
Right.
Which makes me very suspicious.
I'm very suspicious.
Who would have taken that?
I don't know.
Or unless she was saying, oh, it was a ghostly body. It wasn't right. really there. Whatever. I don't know.
All right. What else?
That's another thing. And like I said, there's no really proof. What the dad wanted to do was that he wanted to turn it into a restaurant. He was trying to get a permit to turn it into a restaurant. He couldn't get one. And then he tried to get a permit to open a concession stand.
Outside the place.
Outside of the place. He was a popcorn vendor.
Right.
And he couldn't get that either.
Makes me believe that they probably bought the place and tried to turn it into a tourist attraction.
Right. And I think that that's why, because...
hold on one second. When you look at the condition of this place, what it would have looked like in those days, it would have looked like a haunted house.
Right. Yeah.
By this time, he already has his book out, Carver Effect. To me, it appears that what he's trying to do is to make kind of like a tourist attraction slash amusement park. Come look at the haunted house. They sell you concessions. You know, they sell you popcorn. When you go through your tour, they take the money and they use that to renovate the house. And it's suspicious.
Yeah. Because that's another thing. In, like I said, in the episode, the house didn't really look that bad. It looked a little bit degraded, but not really. It still looked really nice. In real life, it looked like a ruin.
Yeah, go on the YouTube. Go on our YouTube show if you're on the podcast.
Or even do a search for Lamont Mansion or Summerlin on Google.
You'll see what we're talking
about. It's a wooden house.
Yeah.
It just looked like shit. I mean,
It looked like crap.
Yeah, it looked like you wouldn't be able to live in there.
No.
Like, parts of the roof were gone.
Yeah,
and like
you look
also, it looks like a total dump.
You look at the interior photos, and there's just so much work to be done. And actually, the wood that was used looks like it's untreated wood. Everything looks very bowed. Like,
yeah.
The whole house is sagging in the middle. To fix that house, you'd basically have to tear it down and rebuild it with better wood.
Treated wood. Yeah, I think you would just have to start.
It looked like it was made with really substandard materials.
Yeah. I mean, the foundation, I think, is still there, and that was stone.
That looked like the nicest part of it.
The actual house itself looked like it was entirely made of wood, and it looked like it had just been eaten and wet.
It was dry rotted.
Yeah, and it just looked like it was falling apart.
Yeah.
And, okay, so Raymond Bober, like I said, also claimed that he saw in a dream, that there was this land deed and everything like that. Now, Jonathan Carver, who apparently had signed this land deed that he saw in the dream that was hidden in his house and stuff like that. Now, that was a real guy. He was an explorer. But legitimate historians say that they don't think that Carver ever explored that side of the Mississippi River, so he wouldn't have been over there.
And he has no connection to that house.
And he would have no connection to that house. They're like, look, by the time that house was built, Jonathan Carver had been dead like 130-something years.
Right.
Right? So how would that have gotten there?
Right.
And even if it had been legitimate.
Yeah. It's just they tacked his name onto it because he was a local hero.
Yeah. And even if there was a deed, they said it wouldn't have been legally binding anyway, just because of some obscure laws with the Native Americans and all this other kind of stuff. Yeah. So it's like that. So it wouldn't have made any difference, even if they had found it. Like, it wouldn't have made any difference to who owned it or anything like that.
Yeah.
Now, there is also a lot of controversy about the original story, like I said, in the show, they said Patterson, the Patterson family, and he had shot at a ghost and blah, blah, blah. I think most sources I found said that that story about the guy shooting at the ghost didn't gain any ground until that dude's book, until Roman Bober's book came out.
Right.
Now, they have talked to various locals that have lived in the area, like old people that have lived in the area for a really long time. This is in Wisconsin, like I said, around Land O'Lakes, Wisconsin. People that have lived in the area, they talked to a guy who poured the foundation of the house and lived there for a few months, like while he was working on it, and things like that. And most locals, 99% of the locals they've interviewed, said that house was never considered haunted until after it got abandoned and scary looking.
Right.
They said, now, at the time when people were living in it, no, there was no legend about it. There was no, no one shot at a ghost. There was no thing about it being haunted and stuff like that. Because I think the legend was that the servant said it was haunted. The Lamont servants or the Patterson servants or whoever said it was haunted and the family didn't believe them. And then one night they saw the ghost and shot at it or whatever. And that's the legend that went around about it.
But that legend isn't old.
Right. But most people said that they don't remember anything about that.
Right.
Because a lot of people that lived around there, like a couple, like one older lady that they interviewed in the 80s, she said, well, I used to live next door, you know, like not next door because it's big, but, you know, in the next house down. She said, well, people thought it was spooky looking just because it was big. Right. But she's like, I don't remember anyone saying it was haunted or there was ghosts in there or nothing like that. She said, and nobody said anything about it being haunted until no one lived in it for a long time and it started falling apart.
Yeah. Okay. So final verdict. Is it real?
See, no. I don't, no.
Not
I don't
as given.
So.
Not no. as given. But I look at the case. I look at the case and to me, it's two separate stories. The first part of the story, which is a young family moves into a creepy house. The husband goes insane, breaks up the family. There were paranormal effects were reported. Then there's a pause. Then that woman's father buys the place and goes in there and has a, not really seance, but has some does some psychic rituals with automatic writing, self-hypnosis, and comes up with this Jonathan Carver character in a land deed story. Comes up with a ghost story, basically.
Yeah.
To me, I think there's a possibility that what you're seeing was a poltergeist case happening, and then the family moving away from the scene of the poltergeist case. And then the second part is her father coming in trying to capitalize on the poltergeist incident by making a haunted house, not knowing what a poltergeist is. Because you have a young family with young teenage girls under a lot of stress. The relationship between the stepdad and the mom, not too good. It's a creepy house. That could be the recipe for a poltergeist outbreak. Something along the lines of a Mammoth Mountain, like I tell you. It could be.
Well, because most of the first things that they reported were poltergeist-type things.
Yeah.
I mean, they were just hearing funny noises, like their electrical things were messing up.
Yeah, and vague apparitions.
Yeah, stuff like that. So it didn't seem like, I mean, there didn't really seem to be any kind of quote-unquote ghost trying to communicate anything
to
them.
No plot lines.
Or anything like that. Now, there is the whole thing
when the dad gets involved and all of a sudden it's a full-on ghost case.
And all of a sudden it's a ghost story.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think half of the case, there's a possibility that the first half of the case is true.
Yeah, maybe this family moved in and like some kind of weird shit happened, like, you know, and maybe people were creeped out by the house, or the house was so junky that most contractors in the area didn't want to work on it, and maybe that's how the family perceived, oh, they must be scared to come in here.
Right.
And stuff, so they kind of built it up in their minds maybe, and then, you know, it could have been a case where there was just strange things happening in the house and they attributed it to that. Or who knows? And honestly, I don't know what happened with Arnold, the father, the raccoon guy, who just, I don't know if he just like flipped out, and he would have flipped out where no matter
there's
where they were.
There's not enough evidence. There's not enough evidence.
I mean, because they didn't interview that guy. I don't know whatever happened to that guy.
I want to hear his side of the story.
Yeah, all we're hearing is her side of the story on how he acted and her kids, you know, talking about him.
I don't doubt it, but that guy might not mention anything about ghosts or poltergeists.
Yeah, he might have just gone berserk just because, you know what I mean? Because it happens.
Right.
Or, you know, he might have been under a lot of stress and he just kind of flipped out and had a nervous breakdown and she kind of interpreted it as the house doing it.
I have a feeling that something weird happened in the first
half of the case. Yeah, it might have been.
I kind of think something did happen. I don't believe the second half of the story.
Yeah.
When the dad gets involved and all of a sudden, you know, Native Americans and land deeds and automatic
writing.
And guys
shooting at ghosts.
Yeah,
and
automatic writing and hypnosis. That's very 1970s.
Yeah.
Typical 1970s paranormal slash ghost story for the time. Probably didn't happen. Part. I don't think I think the second half of it was to try to capitalize on the first half.
On the first half.
Right.
Well, in a way, it kind of worked because one, there was an episode of a haunting, and two, now Summerwind is known as the most haunted house in Wisconsin, even though the house isn't there anymore.
It's gone,
Yeah, it's gone. But like I said, the chimneys are still there.
How do I rate the episode? 5 stars.
This Love is his seriously, yeah. It's his favorite episode.
My favorite episode.
It's his favorite episode. Right. And we watched it a couple times prior to this, even though we've already seen it.
There are several others that come close, but that one's my favorite one.
Well, I think, and like I said, this might be part of, we're kind of thinking about doing like kind of a semi-regular
Thing. Maybe once a month or so, just when we
feel like where we'll pick one of our favorite episodes. Because like I said, we definitely have to do the one with...
We got to pick a bullshit one though, too.
Well, yeah.
We got to do some dumb ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, some ones that we don't believe.
We should do some Paranormal Witness ones, too, because there were some really dumb ones on there. Now, see... Well,
the first season of Paranormal Witness was very good, though.
Well, it seems to happen... This is what happens with these shows. And the same thing happened with The Haunting. The same thing happened with Paranormal Witness. When Paranormal Witness first started, I actually liked the first season or two better than A Haunting. I was like, wow, this is even better. Just, like, creepier. Like, it was more restrained. Because I tend to... I love horror movies. You know, I'm a big horror fan, which everybody knows that listens to this show regularly. But I'm more a fan of like restrained horror, dread, things like that. I don't like jump scares. I don't really like, you know, just trying to be scary for the sake of being scary. I like something that's like really, you know, kind of low key, but still creepy. And it seemed like the first couple seasons of A Haunting and the first couple seasons of Paranormal Witness were like that. But then it seemed like they kind of went off the rails because they were trying to make it seem more like a horror movie.
Right.
So, like, we have to put demons in every episode. And actually, the newer seasons of A Haunting, the ones we've seen, like I said, I'm not real sure what season they're on. Maybe 8 or 9. I don't know. But every time I see a new one on Destination America, it always seems like they have an agenda.
Yeah.
Like, the old ones didn't really have an agenda. Sometimes they call in a priest, sometimes not. They don't really have any kind of, it's always a demon. It seems like it's just like our last week's show on the Warrens. It's like, it's always a demon now. Yeah, always.
Well, they got purchased by a company called New Dominion Pictures.
Although, you know what I was noticing is that a lot of the old ones were New Dominion, too. Okay.
Then it must be
so maybe
different
it's something
directors
else.
Or something.
Yeah. Because it does seem like...
They're marketing to a different... Different demographic now.
Maybe. Well, because
the competition's tougher, so they're just getting more and more outlandish.
Yeah, because like
CG is cheap now, so that's part of it.
On some of the older shows, it seemed like some of the ghost stories they did, like some of the ghosts were like friendly, or they were just trying to impart information, like there's these letters, and I killed myself, and I want, you know, I don't want everybody to know about it or whatever. But now it seems like everything has to be a dark force. You know what I mean? Everything has to be evil.
Yeah.
Now, because I guess that's scarier. Whatever.
That's what sells.
But, you know, I almost like, I don't know, I kind of like, I'm not saying that ghosts always have to be friendly, because, it's scarier when they're mean and stuff like that. But I think the ones where they're friendly are kind of scary, too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Okay, it's about time, then. I think it's about time to wrap up.
Oh, gosh, we're right over
we're getting over time.
We just blabbed and blabbed.
I know.
Okay, well, we're going to wrap up the show for this week, and I hope you enjoyed our rather rambling discussion of Haunting and the Haunting of Summerwind. And
we'll be back next week.
Yeah, well, shout out again to Project Entertainment Network. You guys are doing a phenomenal job, Armand Rosamilia especially with our download numbers and stuff like that. Also, if you're into the paranormal, obviously I wrote a book called The Unseen Hand, and it's still available and will be available forever. So go get ebook, print, and audiobook. And if you like it, then leave a review, because it really does help. And that'll do it for this episode, right?
Yeah.
Right. We're done. All right. See you next week. Bye.
Where is that raccoon? in my house. The ghost of your memory. The ghost of the love that was took from me. For our love used to be only shadows of the past I see.
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.